Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, calling to you live this week from Arlington Heights, Illinois, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I've got my co-host and son, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady. Hello, Miss Rhonda.
Well, hello there. I'm calling to you from frigid Branson, Missouri, where at least the sun is out, but brr, it's cold out here.
Oh, no snow over there?
Yes, we have a little bit of snow. We had probably an inch, a little bit over an inch overnight, and it's quite cold for us. We don't normally get all that cold, so it's a little burr outside today.
Oh, it's snowy here today. My poor mom is a travel agent, and she works out of her house now. Well, poor mom has had 2 days, yesterday and today, where there have been almost 2,000 flights canceled all over the country because of all the snow everywhere. Man, Atlanta's just getting buried right now. They have 3 inches of ice on the ground in Atlanta.
I just talked to somebody with a bookstore in Atlanta, and he had called me. I said, what are you doing in your store today? He says, yeah, I think we're going to do a couple things and go home. No one's out there. And I said, well, hey. And I just can't even believe that that you even came into the store today. Who was out in Atlanta? Anybody?
Yeah, I mean, from what I'm hearing, Atlanta's planning on having like almost the entire week shut down because they're saying there's 3 inches of snow and three inches of ice on the ground, and it's not going to go above freezing until the weekend for that ice to melt. Wow, that's bad.
Yeah. And they're further south than I am, and we have a little snow, but certainly nothing like what Atlanta has. My mom's husband is going into work today, and they're out the roads, and, you know, life is humming along fine in this part of the world. And I said to my mom yesterday, when I think they had canceled 1,000 flights yesterday, I said, I'm so glad I'm not trying to fly anyplace.
I know. I mean, my poor mom, she has 2 phone lines, and they are both ringing off the hook today, yesterday, too, all day.
Mm-hmm.
No, that reminds yesterday me I was going to have to answer phones. It was so bad.
Oh, you might be an ad hoc travel agent, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Reminds me of why I tend to buy flight insurance when I buy a ticket anymore.
There you go. Sure makes me want to get further south, I'll tell you, but you'd have to go way south to get out of this cold right now.
Yeah, it was like last winter, the whole country had cold, even Florida. My aunt was there in the staying down there in the pipes froze where she went, was out in January in Florida. So.
Well, I remember last year, the day we left for the marketer's cruise, which is right around this time last year, we had snow and ice in Cape Canaveral on the deck of the ship the day we left.
Yep.
And it sounds like it's doing it again this year.
Yeah. Ooh, brr, you think you're going on a cruise to be warm, right?
They broke out blankets. There were no beach towels out on that cruise ship, I'll tell you. They had blankets the entire trip. So I hope this year's is better. I can't wait to hear the stories. Yeah, exactly.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. So that's
so
pretty amazing.
For our listeners, I hope they're not confused like I am, because in one place I see one thing about today's show, and in another place I see another thing about today's show. What are we doing on today's show, Rhonda?
That's really unusual. I don't know what to tell you for that. But so today what we're doing, And I'll tell you, we have some fabulous guests that are going to be coming up. I'm really excited about. We have Ellen Violette coming in February. We have some authors next week who are just phenomenal talking about their story. And it also occurs to me that we have done some fabulous shows and that it's fun to bring up some clips. And so I pulled out a couple of clips from one of our very favorite shows with John Heritaran. So that
I can't wait to hear that one again.
I know. Well, the whole show is just absolutely phenomenal, and it was in, if you look in the archives, it's April of 2010 when he came, and you'll be able to hear the whole show then. I'm not rerunning the whole show. But see, last week we began 2011 by talking about your vision, as you very well remember, and putting together your vision and your goals. And we had part of that conversation had to do with beliefs and how you need to overcome the underlying beliefs that might be between you and what you want to have show up in your life, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was something that deserved a little bit more going through, and I brought John Heritran by the magic of recording back to help us a little bit in talking about that. So that is exactly what we are doing.
That was the best show we ever did on the topic of underlying beliefs that are keeping you where you're at.
Yes, exactly it was. And I am going to actually get the show link and put it up in our show notes. I will do that for us. I agree with you that it was definitely the best in beliefs. And so when I thought of beliefs, and we've had phenomenal guests, but that was one of our best shows ever, period, and certainly our best in beliefs that I can think of that we've ever done. And it's just so awesome because he really gets right down into talking about that. But I wanted to start, Gina, with you, because in the system that you have created, you really help people a lot in being able to identify what are the underlying beliefs that are getting in the way of your success so that you can clear those things out of your way?
Yes.
So
it's one of the single most important topics that we deal with in the systems that I teach. If you can't identify what beliefs are keeping you stuck, it's unlikely that you're ever going to see the success that you're looking for. And there isn't a person on this planet that at some point or another hasn't had to squarely deal with this issue. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much success you've been. This is an issue that comes up for everybody.
Absolutely, it does. Every single person. But what most people maybe don't know is, well, how do I know if I have some underlying belief? Because obviously it's underlying. If it was in my face, it wouldn't be underlying. I'd know what it was. And maybe I could face it. So how are they going to identify when an underlying belief might be between them and success so that they can then go about bringing it up to the surface, which we'll talk about next?
Fantastic question. Well, this is actually something that I've been looking at recently within my own life. And you know, I am an expert at this stuff, so to admit that it is an issue that even I have to deal with is something that most people wouldn't expect. But
right.
Even within my own life, while I have dealt with the vast majority of underlying beliefs that were keeping me from success years ago, there are still going to be times where I kind of plateau, and I get to this level, and all of a sudden, why am I not going further? Alex Vendosian has a great process where he turns his annual income into a monthly income. And I'm trying to use that in my own life and my own business so that my annual income becomes my monthly or quarterly income. And I've noticed in the last year, something is preventing that from happening. And I know what to do to make that happen. So why is the result not following? And the minute I realized, something has to be there. So I started looking at what could that be. And I'm actually working with someone who's one of my coaches because she is an expert at looking at this question. And so we started out recently by looking at, okay, so what are the areas that could be keeping me where I'm at? And I knew it had to be one of two things. It either had to be money or it had to be relationships. And I knew it had to be one of those two things because that's the result I'm trying to get to. I'm trying to get the money to follow, and I'm using relationships to cause that to happen. So
right.
One of those two areas has to have an underlying belief that could be keeping me stuck. So as we started exploring that, she said, well, why don't we start with the non-obvious one of relationships? I said, okay. And what really made a big difference was talking this through. So we started looking at, okay, what is it that I believe about relationships? And one of the things that we realized was that in my own belief system, I tend to believe that if I am going to succeed, I shouldn't leave anyone behind. And we started looking at where that belief came from. And it was formed very, very early in my life by what I saw from my parents. My dad at the time was an executive in a pretty big company. And, you know, those posters that you see about success and teams and whatnot, my dad used to have those all over the walls of his office. And the one that I remember was about building teams. And it was kind of based on the fact that in a team, no one stands out from the crowd. The team as a whole moves forward. And the person that I'm working with says, well, that means that you can't ever move forward on your own if that be the case. And it was just ironic that that morning I had been reading a book of success quotes. And one of the quotes by an anonymous person said, if you always walk in someone else's footsteps, you never leave any tracks of your own. And it really struck me that day because I really never saw it that way. I always thought it was a good thing to follow in someone else's footsteps. If you don't try to reinvent success, you instead duplicate success. It's much easier to get results for yourself. But it also means you're not leaving any footprints of your own. And we started realizing that my whole concept of team building, because of what I was taught at an early age, had me not making my own tracks. And the minute I could recognize that, I was 99% of the way through moving past that belief so that I could go on to create my own tracks and achieve higher levels of success because of it. So just talking things through and examining the areas of your life that you aren't necessarily getting the results that you want in can help you uncover what beliefs are there that may need a shift in some way so that you can move beyond them.
And that's really key. What you said is it's not about big therapy and years of mucking around in your past, per se. It's just being willing to look at something, kind of ask, where does this come from, and take a look around and then and notice what's showing up in your life. That's really what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Ask yourself, is this serving you well? Does this belief coincide with the result or outcome that you want to achieve? Sometimes it does, but quite often it doesn't. And in order to get the result you want, your beliefs have to be consistent with it. Judith and Jim are good friends that we've had on the show. They often talk about their perspectives on money and how their beliefs, again, were formed just by their experiences at a very young age. And Jim, I think, is the one that talks about his parents and their belief about money, and how they always saw these salesmen that would show up at the door as being money-hungry SOBs, which caused Jim to believe that money was bad.
Right.
And it
and then
had
Judith
to be worked through before they could get the results they wanted in their business.
Right. Right. And Judith
Sorry,
talked a lot about... Oh, I'm sorry. You know, she was talking a lot about her. In her religious upbringing, she was taught that money was the root of all evil.
Yes.
Not the love of money, but actual money. And so, and she was talking about that. In fact, I thought of that, and if I had time to dig through that little snippet of the call, I might have put it in here today. But but they were terrific guests. And that is, it's so much shaped what was showing up in their lives. And you look at things and you really can see where these different things come from. One of the things about John Heritorin when he was our guest is he really helps people to put the types of problems that we have into perspective.
Yes.
So how about if I share that first clip, because that's exactly what it leads off with, the particular types of problems that people have, so that you can understand that.
That would be great.
Here we go.
Look, there are only three problems on Earth. The problem of money, health, and relationships. Well, I think it makes it a lot easier for people because, you know, you talk to your friends, you talk to acquaintances, or people you don't even know, and they say, man, you should know, you should see the problems I've got. And by the time they're finished telling you about their problems, you think you could count about 300 of them, and you're wondering why you're listening to this person, because now you want to go commit suicide with them too. But if you take all the problems you have and you split them apart, you put them under different categories, you will find it becomes a lot simpler to look at. Instead of saying, I've got all these problems, you only have a problem maybe of health or relationships or money. And generally, any problem you name would fit under one or more of these categories. That puts it within the realm of being manageable.
It really does.
What it is doing, it's changing your perspective on how you look at things.
You don't have hundreds of problems. You've got maybe three at the most.
Right. And actually, in a more advanced book or discussion, I would say you really don't have even three. You just have one. And that one is the lack of awareness of who you are in this universe. But we won't go there. That gets a little bit more esoteric.
So with any of these three challenges that people can face, money, health, or relationships, what can someone do to start dealing with them?
Okay, now I'll ask you if you have about 5 hours.
Well, I do. I don't know if our listeners do, but I do.
Anyway, let me explain how things work in a way. And whatever I say here is based on what I have found, based on my opinions, and the opinions and wisdom of people I've met throughout this earth.
Oh, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit, so.
Okay. Now, if you have a microwave in your kitchen and you turn it on, it works because hopefully it's a good microwave and the electricity is connected to it. We're talking right now because of something we call electricity. If I want to watch a television show and I flip the switch or the little black box or something, the television goes on because of electricity. You see, there is only one power driving all these things. So when you have challenges or what people would call problems of money or health or relationships or all the sub-problems, all you need to do is to be aware of how to flip the switch, how to turn on the electricity, or be aware of the life force. Let's take an example. If, let's say, money, for example, and it's not really, it's simple, but not really as easy as I make it look. There are many, many, many people suffering today for a lack of or for wanting more money or more resources. The economy, from what I understand, is not the best in the world, and there are a lot of people out of jobs and a lot of people losing their homes and so forth. So basically, that is a money problem, but it goes beyond a money problem to another situation, the situation being asking yourself this question: what do I believe about that? Now, we never take a moment to stop and ask what we believe about something. We just accept it. Things are tough. The economy is going to the dogs. The world is coming to an end, and we buy into that, and we become a part of this mass hypnosis thing, because hypnosis has to do, again, with beliefs and how you believe and what you believe. Do you believe the hypnotist? And we are our own best hypnotists. We hypnotize ourselves to think, oh my goodness, if I don't get enough money that by the end of this month, I'm going to be 4 months late on my mortgage, and there goes the house, and where am I going to move? You see how we can get into telling ourselves stories that may not be true. They may be facts, but facts aren't even facts. Many times, facts are just opinions. Facts
and, you know,
are relative. True.
I don't know if you know my personal story, but I spent 10 years in a hospital bed in a wheelchair after a car accident. And during that 10-year period, I had about $9.9 million worth of medical bills. I had 42 pills per day, 4 continuous IVs per day, 14 different doctors telling me their opinion of what was going on. And by the end of those 10 years, they had all kind of concurred that although I was 40 years old, I had about 12 to 18 months to live. Well, that was back in 2005, and now here we are in 2010. And back then, I bought into it. They told me I was sick. They told me I needed this pill to make me better, so I believed it. They then sent me a bill for $100,000 every time they decided to operate, which was a lot. And before you knew it, I'm $9.9 million in medical bills. And one thing fueled another thing, which fueled another thing, and it became this big, overwhelming belief that I wasn't going to be here in a very short period of time.
That's precisely the point I'm trying to make. Some of your listeners might have read, might have heard of a guy by the name of Richard Bach, who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull and Illusions, Illusions being one of my favorite books of all times.
Mm-hmm. Mine as well. Yep.
Yeah. Plus, I hope you have in your bookshelf my books.
Oh, well, of course.
Whether it's true or not, just say, of course I have them, John.
Yes, I've read them all the time. I recommend it, yes.
The thing about Richard Bach, he wrote this book called Illusions. You know what it is all? Exactly what we started about. What is it that a hypnotist creates? Actually, illusions, in a way. And so if one were to read Richard's book, Illusions, you will find this world and all the things we think we see are really illusions. But those illusions could be as real as anything else.
As long as we believe them.
Absolutely. Right. And as we believe them, they become so. And the more we believe them, the stronger they become. So if we believe in poverty for one reason or the other, this will happen. We will create a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, a very good friend of mine, he has passed away a few years ago, but we were extremely close. His name was Foster Hibbert. Foster was a friend and associate of Dr. Napoleon Hill, the guy who wrote Think and Grow Rich, which I think almost everybody has heard of. And Foster used to stop by. He lived in California, and when he traveled, and he was in Atlanta, where I live, we'll get together and have dinner and so forth. And one day I thought, you know, there I enjoy Foster's company and his wisdom. And after dinner, I said, Foster, you know, I'd really like to do an interview with you, an interview like nobody else ever did. And I will call this interview On Being Rich or On Becoming Rich, because Foster taught prosperity principles based on Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. So Foster agreed, and after dinner, we sat down in my room, in his room. And I started asking him questions. And one of the questions I asked him is, Foster, you teach people to become wealthy. You know a lot about wealth. You were around some of the wealthiest people in this country. What would you say is one of the major causes of not being wealthy, of not being affluent? What is the cause of being poor? And he looked at me and he said one word. He said, guilt. And there was a silence. And I said, Foster, guilt? He said, yes, John. Guilt is the main reason. I said, could you say a little bit more about that? He says, well, you see, the only message guilt gives us is that we don't deserve. It keeps saying to you all the time, you don't deserve, you don't deserve. You ought to be punished for this or that or the other. You ought to punish yourself by being poor or by having no relationships or by being ill. You feel guilty, so the first thing you do, you start dealing with your guilt. As you get rid of that and you start believing that there is no need to feel guilty about things, forgive yourself and move on. And we went on talking. Those of your readers who would want to find that article, it's somewhere on my website. I think it's on insight2000.com, and it's by Foster Hibbert. But it was a very good article about riches, and it touches into beliefs and what we believe. That's what comes to be about. We reinforce these beliefs, and somehow the subconscious can't take a joke. And I remember this thing about it will just do what it thinks you want. So if you're saying, you know, I'm such a poor guy, and you keep saying it, just think of your subconscious mind as a whole bunch of little boys and girls there working on things that you want them to do. You know, they're out of school, they're just working for you. Anything you want, they will do, even if they somewhat think that's not what you should get. So if you're thinking, you know, I am poor, I better face facts. What did we just say about facts? Facts may not be facts at all. They may just
right.
be opinion. So you're saying to yourself, I'm poor, and down there these little boys and little girls in the subconscious are working for you. So, you know, John keeps saying that he's poor, he's poor. We want him to be rich, but he keeps insisting this, and since we work for him, we don't understand why he wants to be poor, but I guess that's what we've got to do, let him be poor. See, I just wanted to break it down into simple language. When I say, excuse me, when I say the subconscious can't take a joke, it will bring to you whatever it is. So if you've got guilt, get forgiven and move on. And there are very easy ways to get rid of guilt. I tell the story in one of my books about this Arizona cowboy who one day at lunchtime jumped off his horse and jumped into a cactus patch. Of course, he jumped out immediately and his friends said, why, Slim, did you do such a stupid, idiotic thing? And I love this answer. He looked at them and he said, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Now, whatever it is we did in the past, we did because it seemed like a good idea at the time, or else we wouldn't have done it.
Right.
Okay? And once we realize that it was a matter of perception, we can change how we look at things and say, oh, yeah, that was stupid. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but not now. And you go on.
Well, and if you look at many of the movies that we see, especially the really good old black and white movies, they have those movies about people who are dirt poor, and yet they feel like they're the wealthiest people in the world. And they live their life in that way, and by the end of the movie, they end up finding the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, so to speak. Why doesn't everybody just decide to be rich?
Well, that is a problem I can't help everybody with because they have such strong beliefs. And until they get to the point of really, really feeling for themselves that there is another way. The way they're in of thinking poverty or blaming others or blaming the economy or themselves, until they can get out of that and be free, then they will be trapped in the thought. We're only trapped in our thoughts. If we can free ourselves from the beliefs, we can be free. And then it takes a little while. I mean, someone can say, got it, I'm going to do it now. I'm going to believe something else. Well, because it's so well written into you, it will take a little practice, a little at a time. Fortunately, here it is about beliefs. Very simple. Your beliefs are not you. You only have them. And if you have them, you can do with them whatever it is you want. You can change them, modify them, but you have to look at them and examine them to see that they were based on things that you thought or others thought for you. When we're growing up, we accept the beliefs of our parents or people who are close to us, even our friends. And many times they become a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, we don't realize that we are working on the same things that were true at one time and maybe not true any longer for me. I want to give you a simple example. I lived, as growing up, in a little village on the northern coast of South America. And to get to the main, the big city, would take about 4 or 5 hours. And once in a while, my dad would take me with him at the age of 4 or 5 to the big city. And I'd be fascinated by the trains and the buses and the cars and the big buildings and, oh my goodness, listen to that, and the marketplace and so forth. And every time I was about to, he was about to cross the street, he would say, son, hold on to my hand now, and he'd grab my hand, and we'd walk across, because he'd say, if you don't hold on to my hand, it could be an accident. A car could run over you. You might not notice that car. And so I believed my dad, and I walked holding on to his hand at the age of 4, and maybe at the age of 5, and maybe even at the age of 7. I believed him, and that belief was a good belief. It was conducive to longevity, because I didn't want to be run over by a car, and my dad wouldn't have wanted that to happen either. However, listen to this. What about when I got to 16 or 17 or 27 or 37 or, let me not push it, at about that age, if I still believed that I had to hold on to my dad's hand to cross the road, see where I'm going with this? I had outgrown that belief. I didn't need it any longer. And yet, that's precisely what we do with all kinds of antiquated beliefs, because they're not us. We only have them. And they're good at one point, like holding on to my dad's hand, crossing the road. That was a good belief then. Not any longer. I grow. I change. Everything changes. So I should re-examine my belief, just like the belief of being poor. Money is hard to get. You know, I'll give your listeners an example of what they can do here. They can sit down, write down on a piece of paper, I believe this about money, and put down under that every belief they have about money. Actually, there are only 2 or 3. One would be, money is hard to get. Where did I get that? Well, when I was little, I looked at my parents. They're struggling every day. They go to work early. They come back late. They're working and working and working. Money must be hard to get. Deep in your subconscious, that thought resides. It becomes a belief. Or another one. Some people think money is evil. Look at the rich people. They're bad. They just take advantage of the poor people. They're horrible. I don't ever want to be like them, because I will feel bad about it, and the subconscious hears it. It becomes a habit, and money is equated with bad people. There's another belief. You change that belief, and you change your perception of money. How about this? Money is good. It is my friend. I am its master. It's only bad when it becomes my master. Money can help me do a lot of things. It could help me build schools, help my family and friends. It could contribute so much to this world and to my life. And there are other people who say, money isn't important. That's their belief. Because, let me tell you, it is important. It's way up there with things like air and food. So it is important. So if we try to kid ourselves, it's not important. It's because we don't have any, or we have too much of it. Okay, that's my commentary so far. Ask me questions about anything, and I guarantee you I'll be able to answer all your questions to my total satisfaction.
Well, one of the things,
you're Robbie Richard Bach with that line. I know you are.
Well, one of the people in the chat today says, so besides changing what we tell ourselves daily, we must take action to change our reality. What would our first step be? Great question, Mark.
Okay, that's a good question. I'm glad that's asked, and I want to look at it a little differently. Besides changing our belief, here is what's going to happen when you change your beliefs and your thoughts change. You are going to get urges to take action.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to force yourself to take action. Just by changing your beliefs, you are going to be led into taking action and taking the proper action. The only thing that you have got to do is to do take the action. But you don't have to run out to the street and say, okay, I got to go somewhere. I don't know where, but I'm going somewhere. That would be meaningless. That's not knowing the difference between direction and emotion, okay? And doing that kind of thing is like trying to row away from the dock or the shore, and your boat is tied to the dock. You have to have a feeling of what you want, where you want to go. So you start with your beliefs, and if you're able to work that out, where you change the beliefs about who you are and what you think of yourself, your self-image. Notice we're running along the line of self-esteem, the border of that now when we talk about self-image. Mm-hmm. Notice things about everything I say tied together, of guilt saying you don't deserve and I'm not good enough and I am not worthy to be rich. You just change your beliefs into, yes, you are as good as anyone else,
mm-hmm.
not better, not worse. You've got the potential, and as you do that, you will start getting urges to do things. I don't do it as often as I used to, but in my youth, which some of you figure must have been a long, long time ago, and through my 20s and 30s and some, you know, I worked for major corporations in New York, and there actually, or at least in my time, something called the three martini lunch. And that and all the great dinners and so forth. So people like me tend to put on a little extra weight. Is that a part of the health challenge? And every time I'd put on an extra few pounds, and my wife would say, John, you got to watch it now. You got to cut back a little on something so you lose that. I think, you know, maybe I can use a different system. Now, I'm the guy who loved candy. Jelly beans, I think, is the second greatest creation on earth. Dunkin' Donuts and all kinds of stuff. And I thought, I really, really want those things. If I walked into your office and you had a little glass of jelly beans there, I'd probably pick up one or two and say, hey, nice jelly beans. Can I have another one or two? Now, here's what I'd do. I'd play some games with myself, because if I got to the point where I'd say, you know, I am not going to touch those jelly beans. I'm not going to touch them, even if it kills me. I am creating all kinds of counter forces, because
right.
a part of me says, you know you like them, John. One little one wouldn't matter, and after the one, you can have another one or another two. And this is what I would do. I changed my beliefs by saying, you know, how about if I do this? Instead of having all these things and drinking all this soda and everything else during the week, I will reward myself starting on Friday evening through Sunday evening. I won't have any of those things these other days. Notice what I'm doing? I'm not denying I don't like them. They cannot be denied, but I'm postponing them. I'm saying, not now, later. You see, the mind is not going to accept your denying it because it will fight back. It's your mind, but it will accept a postponement, like saying, you know, that jelly bean looks great, but I'm not going to have it now. I'll have it later. And if you keep doing that, what happens to the word later? What does it mean? It means not now. And the belief changes, and very slowly you lose the urge to have the jelly bean. And as you practice, that becomes a part of your belief system. Now, would you believe, using the word belief again, would you believe that after a week or two, you could give me 10 pounds of the most wonderful jelly beans on earth, and I would have no desire to even touch them? What do you think happened to my weight? I lost the weight I didn't want. So it's not really complicated. I always say it's simple, but you've got to work on it. You've got to make it a habit. You've got to make your thinking a habit, a thinking of in certain ways. Because a lot of people, you mentioned earlier one of my creations called the Power Pause, which talks about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And Power Pause has helped people throughout the world. As far as we know, last count, 135 countries with a three-step, three-minute method of solving problems. Now, I don't guarantee that everybody would find success in it because I don't know everybody. Just like I don't guarantee that everybody knows how to drive a car or how to fly a plane or how to turn on a TV. We don't know that. But I do say if you follow what it says and you do it honestly, I haven't seen a case that failed. And every once in a while, I'll receive a note from somebody who bought it and say, I'm sorry, this is a lot of junk. It doesn't work for me. And I thought, okay. And we give them a refund. It's rare, but this happens. But notice the words there. It doesn't work for me. And we must remember that when we do things. Say, maybe, just for me, this thing isn't working the right way. All I have to do is change something. Just change some little thing, and it'll work. And you've got to believe that. You've got to believe you're worthy.
So that was a powerful segment from our show with John Heritron, wasn't it, Gina?
It sure was. And it's so true. You know, you started that clip with John saying that every problem you face can be boiled down to one of three things. A problem with health, a problem with relationships, or a problem with money. And if you really remember those words and look at everything that you think has you stuck as one of those three things, it is so much easier to overcome.
Yes. Yeah, definitely, because that, and really what he was saying is so true, that it's not that you have 300 or 20 or whatever different things. They really can be categorized, and that's the type of thing. You know, talk about being able to break a task down into meaningful parts like chunking, and that's really the same exact idea with categorizing the types of issues that you're working with, being either relationship, health, or money, right?
And that's really why the example I gave before you played the clip said I knew it had to be one of two things, relationships or money. I knew it wasn't health. My health has been awesome, other than my broken ankle, for the last few years. I knew that one could be eliminated easily, so it had to be right. One of the other two. Couldn't be anything else because you only have those three kinds of problems.
Exactly. And that really made it easier for you, didn't it, in terms of being able to narrow it down to what the issue really was?
Oh, quite frankly, I never, ever would have figured out what the issue was had I not been able to look at it in one of those three categories. Man, it could have been a gazillion things, and I'd be here for many, many years trying to figure it out if I didn't take the guidance from John to heart and really say, okay, got to be one of those three things. Where do we start? And then randomly picked one of the two remaining things as, okay, let's look at this first, and if there's nothing there, then we'll look at the other one.
Yeah, and that, you know, that made so much sense for you and really caused you to be able to get to the heart of the issue. So I think that is just knowing that it can take so much ease into working through any issue because you know it's got to be one of those things. So that also probably makes you feel like you have less issues to work with because you're like, well, it's got to be one of those three, so, you know, we can get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. And I've worked with people in the past where the underlying belief was so deep-rooted that they just could never see it themselves. Your perception really is your reality, right? So in their perception, there was no quote-unquote problem there. It's really important to get the fact that a lot of times you're not going to be able to see your own problem because you can't see the forest or the trees. Talking it through with someone else, a coach, a mentor, a mastermind partner, a friend, makes it so much easier, especially if you're talking it through with the person that you trust and respect, and you give them permission to help you find it. Others see you in a totally different light than you see yourself. And if you can get other people to help you uncover those things that you're stuck on, you'll find them a lot faster. And 9 times out of 10, and I really, really mean this, just recognizing where the belief is 99% of the way through shifting the belief to something that serves you better. It just takes recognizing it as a belief that's not serving you to start with.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just that recognition. It's because it's the power of turning the lights on. The power of really turning the light on. What's going on? That's all it is. It's just flipping on. It's like there's this dark room, and you know you can either maneuver your way around and figure it out the hard way, or assuming that you have eyesight, you can flip a switch on and be able to see it and see what's going on.
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference. It makes it much easier.
It really does. And, you know, there are certain things tend to repeat themselves for many people. The underlying fear of success, the underlying fear of failure, the underlying belief in money. I mean, there are repeating topics that almost everybody has to deal with at one point or another in their life. But just coming to a conscious recognition that the issue is there in the first place gives you the power to make a choice to move beyond it. And it's sometimes really that simple.
Yes. Yeah, just seeing where it came from. A lot of times you see where something came from, and you can look with your adult perception and go, well, that's flat-out ridiculous, or that's a big fat lie or whatever. And that carries you so far through being able to change it because you have now released all of this pent-up energy. It's just like you've opened the door and it's all gone out.
You know, one thing we didn't say in the show with John, and we should really point out here, is that just because you have an underlying belief that isn't serving you doesn't mean that the belief is wrong. So what we're not saying here is that there's something wrong with you or something broken. Not what we're saying at all. What we're saying is that the belief is not serving you well and therefore is keeping you where you're at. And whether it's wrong or right, isn't the issue. It's a matter of finding a belief that will serve you better so that you can reach the goals that you've set for yourself.
Right. I don't personally think that anybody is broken.
Right. Neither do I.
No, I just, that is not at all, not at all a part of my consciousness at all. And it's really interesting because when you can perceive that best qualities in people are there, they may be, you know, temporarily not visible or not available, but it doesn't mean they're not there. It changes how people respond to you because they feel that you recognize that they are whole, worthy, valuable people.
Absolutely.
And that makes all the difference. I do have one other suggestion as well to help people in identifying the beliefs, and I think what you were saying about having those supportive people, a friend, a mastermind partner, or having a mentor or whatever, but there's also a lot that you can do with writing and that will really help you to get to the core of what's going on. And I don't mean that you should do it in place of talking with somebody, but that it's a good thing to do in addition, because in the act of writing with a specific thing that I'll mention in just a moment here, you can get to the core and let that deeper part of yourself kind of show you what is in there pretty effortlessly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the point is, use a mechanism for uncovering those underlying beliefs. Don't let yourself be stuck there for months or years or worse yet, decades. Find a way to uncover it quickly so that you can move beyond.
Right. And don't try to do it inside of your head.
Yes.
And that's the thing, is a lot of people go, well, if I just kind of mentally go through stuff, I'll figure it out eventually, and well, maybe you will eventually. But by writing and or by talking to somebody, either or both of those things can get you there much quicker. So it's that case of, did you want to walk 20 miles or would you rather hop on a vehicle of some sort or a horse or something that will get you there faster?
Yeah, much, much different outcome there. So
very,
what do you write about?
Well, there are a couple of things that I love to do myself when I find an issue and that I love to recommend to people. And the cool thing is it's very, very simple. We like simple, so does John. You know, we love simple. And that what you can do is, first of all, before you're going to write in an area like this where you're dealing with beliefs, it's really good and important for you to kind of clear a space for yourself. I mean that kind of mentally and emotionally and even physically, is to have a little space where you don't have the kids running around and, 50,000 things going on and televisions blaring and all this other stuff. Get yourself a little bit quiet and get yourself a space that is uncluttered where you can start to write, and just for a few minutes. And then one of the things you can do is to have a dialogue with whatever's bothering you. So you can pose a question in writing to yourself. I want to understand why I, have this experience. And whatever starts to come up, you can think of it as a dialogue going back and forth between you and between the belief. And it's funny, it sounds a little woo-woo. However, what I've noticed is people who do that tend to find at first it may seem strange and kind of forced, and pretty soon they really get into it. And within just a matter of 3 or 4 or 5 minutes most of the time, or even if it's a little bit longer, but not very long, they'll start to come to some great understandings about where the belief comes from, and then they can decide, is that belief serving? Can be another question. Is this belief serving me? Is this belief useful? Is this belief helping me get to where I want to be and to living my dream? And if the answer is no, ask that belief, well, can I just let go? You can do all of these types of things in writing, and the shift that you'll feel emotionally and personally and spiritually can be just astounding.
Absolutely. And, the other guest that we had recently who helped us look at this topic was Dr. Michael Craig.
Yes.
He had a process that we talked about at length on the show that helps you to find these underlying beliefs that are not serving you.
Yes, absolutely. And his is involved and helps if you have another person. But his system is very good for being able to come up with what are those beliefs, are they serving you, and can they be changed?
Yeah, and he says that you can do it in about 30 minutes. So if it's taking you days or a week and you still haven't found it, it shouldn't be taking you that long. Use one of the suggestions that we're making here today to help you find it quicker than that.
Absolutely. You'll find the Dr. Craig Show. It's December the 28th, 2010, and you made a short link to it at askggg.com/Dr. Craig, D-R-C-R-A-I-G. So you'll find that show there. And if you would like to explore writing, if you enjoy writing as a tool for self-discovery and overcoming stress and so forth, you will find that activity that I mentioned and about 11 others in writeonpurpose.com, which is a program I co-created with Chief Robert and Terry Talltree, who have been our guests here
Fantastic.
As well.
Fantastic. Yep. Fantastic.
Absolutely. So that's a great program. Is there? It helps you use writing as a tool, and for some people that really works. Obviously, like anything else, not everybody resonates to that. It's an awesome tool.
That's the neat thing. We're all unique, and we all have unique ways of learning that serve us best. For some, it's writing. For some, it's talking. For some, it's talking to yourself. For some, it's talking to others. Whatever way works best for you, do it. The value of doing this early on in 2011 is going to totally change your entire year.
Yes, absolutely. There's something else that John said on our show that it was kind of funny, but it's so true. And he talked about two critical qualities for success. And then he goes on to talk a little bit about his book, The Power Pause, and how that came to be. So how about if I share that clip with us?
That'd be great. Thanks.
I've always said there are two things necessary for success. Two things only in this world necessary for success. One is a sense of purpose. Two is a touch of madness. I've got them both. And if you have a sense of purpose, and you have that belief that, you know, nobody has done this, that probably will be okay if I try, and you go on and you're crazy about it, you will probably make it work. I think some of the greatest inventions of all times came about that way. So many years ago, actually, this is the 10th anniversary of the Power Pause. It's been around that long. Now, would you believe it's a simple 110-page book, I think 110-page of stuff written there, and it's an e-book, and it doesn't exist anywhere on earth as a hard copy book except in one place, and that's not in the United States, and it's not in English. It's in South Korea, where we signed a contract where they would print it in Korean, and of course, the only thing I could recognize in the book is my name, and it wasn't competing with anything else, and it was done over there as a hard copy book a few years ago, and was even number 5 on their list. Now, how did all of that come about? And by the way, we're getting ready to give Turkey the right to publish it in Turkish, in the Turkish language. This year. How did it all come about? Well, many years ago, I was visiting a very dear friend of mine who lives in Connecticut. He's a guy by the name of Butch James. And Butch James is a Harvard guy and went to school with some of the richest men on earth today, people like Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer of Microsoft. And Butch and I became friends over the years, and I was visiting him and talking about, he asked me about some of my projects, and I told him what I was planning, and then he looked up from what he was doing. He said, John, do you think, he had read when you can walk on water, take the boat, and morning has been all night coming. And he loved them. But he said, do you think you could write a little book? Little by little, I mean short, like 110 pages, 120 pages or thereabouts, that will explain to people in very simple language the things you believe and the things you know work for you and could, if they try it, work for them also. And I thought, what a silly thing. Who wants to do that? I'd much rather write the other interesting things. But I came back home, and I thought about it, and I said, this guy is a genius. That's what we need, simplicity. Everybody talks about all these complex, different types of things. Yoga and Raj Yoga and Kriya Yoga, and they talk about Kundalini rising and chakras and everything else, and nobody knows what they're talking about. They speak about meditation in all kinds of ways, and I said, look, I talk to myself, by the way. Okay, I said, hey, John.
I do, you too. I got that touch of madness, too.
I do that, and I even answer myself. I said, John, you can make this a lot simpler. People don't have time to go like a Swami does into the hills and mountains and jungles and study for 25 years. People don't even have time to meditate for an hour or two. Or, for goodness sakes, at least in the U.S., we have maybe half an hour or an hour for lunch, most people. And what are they going to do with it? Can you boil this thing down into a system that could be done so quickly and repeated over and over again until it becomes a habit? So sat down, thought about it, and out of that came the power pause. 3 minutes, three steps to real happiness and personal success. And it's broken down.
That is John talking about the sense of purpose and a touch of madness, and then creating a simplified system that's a path to follow.
What a brilliant way of doing it.
Yeah.
So simple. Really,
yeah. And who doesn't love simple? I mean, I certainly like if something can be simple versus the 150 steps to your ideal whatever, you know. if you can do it in three, that's terrific. And that kind of made me laugh because I think of how I boiled down all of the work in terms of the hero's journey that Joseph Campbell did into three words. And I always say, I don't know, he'll either be very thrilled with me or ready to not be happy with me about that. But it made it simple so that people can understand. You don't need to make anything that's obtuse or that takes a long time or that's difficult. And find somebody, if you're going to talk to a person, you know, somebody who will be understandable and who is trying to baffle you with your brilliance.
Yes. Absolutely. And that brings it back to talking to other people again, doesn't it?
Yes. Even if you do some writing, I still think there is nothing to replace getting some feedback, talking to other people, because everything that happens in your life is a mirror to you.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, so many things that do get people stuck when they're trying to build a business online could really be overcome just by talking to other people. For example, a lot of people get stuck on, okay, I know I want to build a business, but what kind of business? What niche is it going to be in? What am I an expert at? Well, don't sit there and wonder. Ask the people that know you best. What do you think I'm an expert at? 9 times out of 10, you're going to get an answer pretty quickly. We all get impressions about the people in our lives usually within the first 15 to 30 seconds of meeting that person. And as people get to know you, they're going to have an impression of this is what this person's an expert about, or this is why I would want to contact this person other than to say hello.
Right.
Find out what they think about you and use that as the business. Clearly, there's a reason for that belief. Whether it's right or wrong, something you did caused that belief to exist in the people who know you best. And it's a great way to uncover the direction for your entire business and your entire life.
Yeah, I mean, it's, to me, it's so simple to figure some of those things out. What do people continuously ask you for help with? What keeps you up nights, get so excited that you want to go into it, and the next thing you know, it's 3:30 in the morning, and you're going, gosh, I have to get up tomorrow, and you didn't even realize the time. There's that timelessness that you can get. You know, things like that, and a lot of it is going to come from a little self-examination, feedback from somebody else, perhaps a little writing too, you know, in kind of a mix to be able to help you to uncover that, rather than just messing around inside your head trying to think through it without externalizing it in some way, either writing, talking, all those types of things together.
Absolutely. You know, over the weekend, my mom brought me up this box. She was putting away all of the Christmas stuff. And she brings this big box up, and she says, I've had this box with your name on it for years, and I've been saving it for you. I'm like, okay, wonder what it could be. Well, inside is all of the papers that I wrote in college, probably the first 2 or 3 years of college, all the different courses I took, all the notebooks, all the papers and whatnot. And it was so fun to look back at what I wrote, because even looking at my old college papers, it was really clear just glancing over them that the stuff I really loved, where like the writing was just flowing and just constantly coming out, is all the stuff that is part of the model I now teach for building businesses. I had a paper in there about microeconomics and macroeconomics that I swear could have been the introduction for a course in internet marketing and relationship marketing more than anything, because it kept talking about how relationships could be used to change the demand. And I'm like, holy cow, that sounds like something I would say today. Who would have thought, looking at my economics papers, that there would be something in my economics papers that has to do with what I do today? You don't take those courses thinking about that. You take them because you have to, right, just to get your degree.
Right.
And even in some of my math courses and in my notes, there were notes in the margins that have a lot to do with what I do today, looking at statistics having to do with conversions and traffic and whatnot. And it blew me away to realize that the knowledge I had gained from those early required courses in college really somehow applied to what it was I was doing today. And I bet you if someone didn't know me and just went through those papers, that they could have easily come to the conclusion that I would be an expert at what I'm an expert at today just by having read those papers. And it really got me to thinking about it, because clearly all of us have had life experiences that shape our world, that make us into the people that we are today. And I think if you do have those kinds of documents, not everybody's mom saves all of their college papers, right? But if you do have those kinds of things that you can go back and glance through, patterns will come out from them that can help you even figure out where the beliefs are that you need to be looking at, or where your passion really is, so that you can use it to build your business.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's so true and so powerful. Gina, you remind me of, it would be clear to anybody that I've been the story for pretty much my whole life. In high school, in chemistry class, I got a little bit in trouble one time because I was doodling, except that once he saw what I was drawing, he really liked it. I was talking about, the class was about organic chemistry, and they were talking about relationships in chemical bonding. And I drew a little cartoon about a molecule of hydrogen and of chlorine and fluorine, and these changing of bonds that happened because there was a strong bond. And
oh,
he ended
that's
up using
too
that
funny, Rhonda.
Yeah, it was. And
telling
he ended
a
up
story
using
in chemistry class, figures.
Exactly.
I would expect nothing less from you. You know that?
Of course you wouldn't. But it's just, it's one of those to point it out. That, and the funny thing was I met somebody who had the same chem teacher several years, about 6 or 8 years after I did. And she, I said, oh, I wonder, is he still using the slide about hairy hydrogen? She goes, oh, my God, that helped me so much, that silly slide. He still was using it years later.
too funny.
But, yes, it's very clear. And just the things people will say to you, you'll notice. Like, I often have people comment on, well, I can tell you're the story lady because I'll come up with some funny little story about whatever it is. And I was talking about somebody, and I said, well, clearly their moral compass is missing its magnet. And my person I was talking to cracked. So you will see patterns, whether it's about beliefs, and it shows you where your attention is. And everything that you say and do really shows where your attention is.
Yeah, it really does. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to uncover those kinds of things. You can look back in your own life, and even what you just suggested, looking at the things that got you in trouble as you were growing up, can help you uncover the thing that you really are an expert in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's just a matter of thinking a little bit outside the box for taking that information that you have about yourself and putting it into the model for the business. I know today we're not talking about the strategic process, but I think it can help you uncover those beliefs that are keeping you where you're at to really understand the process and how it works. Your first step in anything is to plan your outcome. Where are you trying to get to? And then use that to work your way backward to figure out how to go about getting to that outcome. So you really are identifying the end point and the start point. The start point is those things that you know about yourself that you can use as assets to get you to the goal that you've got. You've got to start by identifying those goals. And you might even, while you're doing that, stop to think about those beliefs that you would need to have in order to achieve those outcomes so that you can look at the beliefs that you've got now in a different light, to see which ones are congruent with the beliefs you'd need to have in reaching those goals and which ones are not, so that you can do a little bit of work in shifting them.
Yes. Yeah, you need to be a match for what you want to have showing up in your life. So that feeling, for example, a feeling of poverty is not a match for being wealthy.
Yeah, not exactly, right? Or
right,
maybe you want a Mercedes-Benz or a Rolls-Royce or some specific kind of sports car. Well, a feeling of poverty isn't very congruent with that either.
No, definitely not. Nor is it a good match with being successful in your business or even on a job if you are working a job. A feeling of poverty
absolutely
is never conducive to moving forward in anything.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you learn how to interview for a job, one of the first things you learn is that your dress will affect getting or not getting the job, right?
Right.
The reason that is true is in part because of the feeling that is within you the minute you put on that sharp suit of clothes, you know.
Yeah.
Someone going out to interview for a sales job, maybe things have changed while I've been an entrepreneur, not out in the job world, but used to be that you'd wear a blue suit, a white shirt, and a red tie. That was your power suit in sales, right? It creates this feeling, and within you, that feeling will come across to someone else saying that you are a success. I can't remember who said this, but maybe you remember, Rhonda. One of my friends, I think, used to say that you become the person who owns your goal. Do you remember who I used to talk about saying that?
No, I don't.
I bet it was Dr. Jill Amon Wexler. I bet it was Dr. Jill. She always says that you become the person that owns your goals. And if you really want those goals in your life, you've got to become the person that owns those goals before you will have the outcome yourself.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I've been reading a really interesting book that has some really important points to exactly what we're talking about. Have you read The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell?
You know, I read it a long time ago, not recently, and it is a book that I would love to go back and reread. It's an awesome book.
I'll go back and have a peek because I listen to audiobooks a lot of times while I'm exercising, and because it gives my mind something cool to do, and I love it. So I was listening to that, and he's talking about crime in New York, and this really does relate for anyone who's going, what? It really does. So he's talking about crime in New York, and crime in particular in the subway system. And they had gotten some guy whose name I don't recall, but who really made these dramatic changes. And it went from where people were just doing unspeakable yucko things in the subways to having a major shift happen to where crime reduced and the subway became a more pleasant place to be at that time. And it all happened to do not with programs about anti-crime or programs about honesty or, you know, whatever kinds of things. It had to do with keeping a lot of the little tiny externals going in the right direction. So they would remove graffiti from any car in the subway overnight, and it was not allowed to go back on the track until it was clear. And the way graffiti was done, it was like this three-day process of being able to paint the cars and stuff. So they would find, they would let it get till the second day where the kids had already put in a couple of nights of long work or whatever. Then all of a sudden it would be gone, the train would be clean and brand new again. And that ended up stopping it. It was small things about making the physical environment pleasant and well kept. It wasn't all these big things. It wasn't all this mental stuff or psychobabble or any of that. It was all just little things about keeping the externals conducive to the type of environment you want to create.
Well, and you know, what's really interesting about that is what they really did was they created an experience in the subways, one that had an emotional impact on the people in the subways. Mm-hmm. It is no different than what you want to be doing, whether you have an offline business or an online business for your customers. You want your customers or your prospects to take certain action. That's the whole point of being in business, right? That buying habit or the purchase is the action that you're looking for from a prospect. So you've got to create that whole experience in order for you to get them to make a purchasing decision, whether they're walking into your offline store, whether they're wandering into your online website, whatever it happens to be, the whole experience comes together to determine whether or not they're going to make a buying decision or not. Will they buy from you, or will they go to the other store down the street and buy from them? Will they come to your website, or will they go to the other website and index down in the search results to make their purchase? They're going to make a purchase. If you want that purchase to be with you and your business, you've got to do something to cause that to happen. And becoming the person that owns your goals is really no different than creating the experience that causes your prospect to become your customer. It's the same thing either way. It's all about the little itty-bitty details like the graffiti on the train. You know, if someone goes into a dark, dingy subway, the lights are sometimes working and sometimes not working. Some have been spray-painted. There's writing on the wall. Well, the whole experience becomes seedy, and it causes people to not necessarily do what they should be doing in a subway, right?
Right. Exactly.
Same exact thing if you've got a website that's really dark and kind of sloppy and it looks like there's typos all over the place and there's images that are missing. Are you going to get many people who come there and want to give you hundreds or thousands of dollars? Probably not very often.
No amount
of traffic is going to make you any more money until you change the overall experience.
Same thing with a book cover. You know, people do judge a book by its cover, and I saw somebody that had a completely black cover with some, I think, yellow words on it, and it was all
cast.
I mean, that makes my stomach lurch even to think about it. That was so bad. And it's like, I can't even think of anybody wanting to buy that book. Apparently, if they saw her speak, they would, but she said people did pick up the book and put it down because they just couldn't could pass the cover. It was nasty. It doesn't matter how beautiful, brilliant, and uplifting your words could be if they can't get to them past the cover.
Well, if it's all in capital letters, she's starting the experience before they turn to page one, screaming at her readers.
Right. In yellow on black.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. Unless she's talking about death and dying, I can't imagine why she'd want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if it was a black cover with a skull and crossbones and something, and it was a pirate book, that could be very understandable. But for somebody who is a platform speaker, you know, helping people with their business, I can't even think why she would have thought that was a good idea. I don't know. You know, if I were even going to pick
I can tell you why she thought it was a good idea. That one I have an answer for.
Okay.
So often, people who are writing books, building businesses, they look at whether they would like something or not and think that that's what they should do in their business or on their book cover. And she may have liked the color combination of black and yellow.
Well,
but
maybe.
What she forgets is that she is not her ideal prospect. Rarely do I find entrepreneurs who are their ideal prospects, because the whole idea is that you need to be the expert who's already overcome the problems that your prospect has. So by definition, you're no longer your ideal prospect. And
right.
Whether you like it or not is totally irrelevant. What matters is, will your prospect like it or not?
Yes, will it connect you to the right people? And that's definitely for sure. I don't know whether she likes that combination, but gosh, I can't think of much more repellent
You know, the other one that might work with black with yellow letters is if you're writing a book on keeping bees.
Well, yeah.
Black and yellow bumblebees.
Yeah, yellow with black stripes, black with yellow stripes, yeah. Yeah, beekeeping for fun and profit.
Too funny.
Yeah, but it is, it's true. It's a lot of the little things, and that's one of the things I thought the tipping point is really great at pointing out. I'm not all the way through it yet, but it's been really interesting, the stories and examples that that he uses throughout the book. And then Blink is another one, author.
And I think that the really important message in what you just shared is that the little details really do matter. In our conversation last week about creating your vision, the details are so important. I shared the story before on our show, but it warrants being shared again briefly. And that is when I went through my transformation several years ago. In the visualizations that I was doing, I was like a size 14. I was very successful in the vision just because my clothes were really nice and my jewelry was really nice. And in the visualizations, I would be going to places that were really upscale. All
mm-hmm.
those details became my reality through the process of visualization, even though I didn't put them there intentionally. So
right.
It's really important to consider those details when you're writing out your goals list, as detailed as you can make it, because those details will become your reality. In visualization, as detailed as you can make it. And the same with looking at your underlying beliefs. A lot of times, it's the little things that cause that belief to happen. It wasn't,
right.
Well, we're talking about Judith and Jim. It wasn't that either of their parents would repeatedly tell them, now remember, money's evil, or now remember, money is a bad thing, not a good thing. Their parents didn't really think about that. It was in the detail that belief was developed.
Right. And doing things that remind you of where you want to be help you to move into the new belief and the new action, because the actions follow the beliefs. So you
Absolutely.
Get a Starbucks. You getting a Starbucks every day is one of the examples of you feeling prosperous.
Yes.
Okay. For me, wearing Chanel No. 5 cologne every day is one of the things that does that for me. That's a beautiful scent. It's a very definitely a sign of wealth and prosperity to afford that in the first place. Those types
of
things.
And the thing that most people don't understand is that in getting yourself into a new belief. You want to incorporate all five of your senses. Don't just think about it. Don't just see it. Don't just hear it. Get all five senses. Your belief about channel number five and my belief about Starbucks both incorporate our sense of smell. And the really weird thing that I came to understand a few years ago is how powerful the sense of smell can be. The
yep.
more you can get that particular sense into a vision or a visualization, the easier it will be to make that your reality. Can't tell you why, just know that it's true.
Smell is the only unfiltered sense. It does not have to go through transmutation for you to understand like all the other senses do.
That's why. Thank you, Rhonda. I've always wondered about that.
Yeah. I was talking about last week, there's this little part of the brain that dangles down like a pea on a string right in the very upper part of the nose. The sense of smell has no filtering. It doesn't have to be, something hits a certain thing and has to be sent up and interpreted and go, okay, this is what the interpretation is. Smell just hits the emotional part of the brain. Boom. Smack straight on.
That's why, because it really is the emotion that triggers the memory.
That's it. And smell hits.
Gotcha.
Emotion.
So does a Starbucks latte. It smells a certain way. And I get Starbucks every day, not just because I like the taste, but more than anything because I love the smell. First thing I do is smell my latte, not taste my latte.
Mm-hmm. I do, too. I sniff things. People laugh at me because I smell things sometimes. But I'm like, no, it's all part of it. I'll sniff some good food before I eat it because that's part of the whole experience of enjoyment.
Absolutely. Boy, I learned something on the show today. Thank you, Rhonda.
You're welcome. And this was great. It was wonderful to revisit John Hericheran virtually through the recording of our other show, and a great show on beliefs. So,
you know, we should do a best of Relationship Marketing 101 one of these days. We've got almost 3 years of shows to draw on here.
Yes. Yes.
We'll have to talk about how we can make that happen.
We can easily do that. It's just a matter of pulling some great clips out because there are some awesome shows, great guests that we've had.
There really are. Well, I have to thank you so much for that. Without you, most of those shows would never have occurred. So thank you again for all that you do here on Relationship Marketing 101. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Gina. I appreciate you, too. And I appreciate all of our listeners as well.
As do I. And we will be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. And where can they go to find out more about all this great stuff, Rhonda? From my end, I have a course called the Miracle Motivational Package that really talks a lot about these topics that you'll find at AbundantPositivity.com.
If you go to writeonpurpose.com, W-R-I-T-E, onpurpose.com, you'll find some writing activities to guide you toward living your life of great purpose and passion.
And we will see you all again next week. Have a wonderful week, Rhonda and everyone.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Direction.